You are now entering Zone 4. Please be seated and prepare to experience the nerd aristocracy. Any offences encountered by today's broadcast will not be the responsibility of the Mars Sivex Consolidated Drilling Corporation or its subsidiaries.
Welcome to the Nerd Aristocracy, the podcast for all things nerd. Available worldwide at nerdaristocracy.com.
And now,
the leaders of the nerd proletariat, your esteemed hosts, Jonathan Dell and Ryan Reinecke.
Greetings, proletariat. Welcome to episode 24.
24 with Jack Bauer. No.
And Jonathan Bell and Ryan Reinecke.
What's up?
Here we are, folks. Thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Appreciate.
How is your life, proletariat? That sucks.
Hang in there.
Yeah,
there.
You'll be okay.
It's a long tunnel, but there is a light.
You'll be fine. I promise. You'll make it through. By the way, that must have been the shortest sad story in the history of all time.
They're very articulate. They summed it up very nicely.
Yeah.
Succinctly.
I think the way the proletariat just told us that sad story reminds me of a story about Ernest Hemingway. Have you ever heard the tale or fable or myth or whatever you want to call it of Hemingway's six-word story?
No.
Okay. I don't know the details. Essentially it boils down to Hemingway was in a bar drinking, believe it or not.
Wait, Ernest Hemingway?
Ernest Hemingway, yes.
A drinking writer.
Right.
Okay. Whatever.
Who knew? So Hemingway's in a bar and he's talking to a couple of guys and he's making the point that you don't have to use a million words to tell a compelling story. You know, to make an interesting narrative, you don't have to write a 1,000-page book.
Right.
And I think, you know, he had been getting kicked in the balls a little bit for, you know, his novels being relatively short in comparison to his contemporaries.
Uh-huh.
And he was making the point, you know, you can write a compelling short story and then somehow it turned into one of those crazy bar bets. And one of the guys bet him, I don't know if it was a drink or money or what, but that he couldn't write a compelling story using six words. Like, give me a six-word compelling narrative. And Hemingway thought for a few minutes, and then he looked at the guy and he said, "For sale, baby shoes, never worn." Yeah. And he won the bet, and the guy bought him his drink or paid him his money or whatever. And I think that's, you know, that might be literary folklore. I don't know, but it is attributed to him. And I think you can read about it on the internet somewhere. But
that's awesome. That is a
point taken, you know.
Yeah. Thank you for your literary penis of huge size for whipping it out.
Sure.
That actually reminds me, I guess it could be a story, of something that I discovered. A writing when I was in New Orleans, living there in the Marigny Triangle, a nice little area of New Orleans right between Elysian Fields and Esplanade, right outside of the craziness of the quarter, but close enough to skip into at any time.
Writer-friendly area, artist-friendly area.
All that region. I mean, the city, come on.
Sure.
And it was the kind of neighborhood where I would walk down the street to get a cup of coffee from the local coffee shop, not a Starbucks. And one day I passed somebody's house, and they had some cardboard boxes out by the curb, ostensibly, "Hey, here's shit I don't need anymore. Please take it." That happened a lot. Some shoes, some clothes, an old radio, stuff like that.
Right.
This one, just for an example, was a collection of amber glass bottles, like a dark amber. And there must have been like three big bottles of probably like 30 ounces each, and then a bunch of smaller ones of maybe like 10 ounces each, and they were oils, like scented oils that you would mix together.
Okay.
And
so,
make your
so
own
it wasn't,
scents.
It wasn't like a 40-ounce beer glass.
No, like a Thunderbird. No. That's in the hobo's hand as he's clutching it, trying to get money out of you, and usually at night. And one was a bottle of vegetable glycerin, and there were other ones that was like rose hip extract and vanilla bean and stuff like that, and they were concentrated oils. And I was able to make my own alchemical solution of a scent that I wore on myself out of this stuff found there. And that shit lasted me for a long time. Was wonderful. Just that odd occurrence that I would find that and it would be so usable and such a find, a little treasure. Another time I found a book. Nice maroon, deep-colored, canvas-bound book about the size of a personal diary, maybe about a half-inch thick, hardcover, gold ribbon page bookmark sewn in. Opened it up. The first entry. Writing this in the hopes that I get better.
Wow.
Second entry. The rest was blank.
No shit.
Total.
Really?
I think I still have that. I never wrote a word in it myself. Wow. Almost feeling some kind of superstition about it, you
for
know?
For sure.
But I was just blown away by that. It was like, I read that. I was
dude.
That reminds me of that fucking hardcore. I'm getting little fucking chills.
Yeah, for sure, man. Me too.
That's cool deal.
Pretty fucking crazy.
So, proletariat, there are other people out there.
Yeah.
Carry through, my wayward son.
There you go. We're not in Kansas anymore. Anyway, so that was a good way to start off the podcast on positive, happy.
Very introverted. Very
sure.
Massage the cerebrum.
There you go. There you go.
So I got something to blast it out.
Please.
The new Spider-Man trailer, The Amazing Spider-Man. Have you seen it, the teaser trailer?
I have.
You have?
Yes.
Okay. What did you think about it?
I don't know. I have mixed feelings.
It doesn't look like you like it.
I mean, it's one of those things where it's like, I think they're trying to go this way with Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. And this way with Batman. And for the proletariat, since they can't see me, I'm going
very illustrative.
Two different ways.
You're doing a doo-wop.
Yeah, I'm doing like the four tops shimmy to the left and saying, this is the way they're going with Spider-Man. And then I'm shimmying to the right and saying, this is the way they're going with Batman.
Really?
And I really like the Batman trajectory more than I like the Spider-Man trajectory.
See, because I think what they're doing with Batman is this. To the left, shimmy.
Right.
And what I think they're trying to do with the Spider-Man is left to the shimmy same way. I kind of got that. I mean, it looked like a very emo Peter Parker, you know, all hustled in the back of class, like scrubbing.
Well, maybe it's just the character of Peter Parker that I don't like. I've never been a huge Spider-Man guy.
Yeah. Well, from my knowledge, Peter Parker has always been kind of up. You know, I mean, he was a very young superhero, very,
right.
I thought, like, indomitably optimistic.
Sure.
I thought that was the concept of Peter Parker.
And it is, and maybe that's why I don't like him.
Right.
Because I don't see much of myself in that chipper little boy-faced guru, you know.
But
what
in
I mean?
This, it looks like they're trying to cast him a
by
little
the way
darker.
Boy-faced guru should be the title of my next album.
Awesome band. I think we have our title there. Yeah, he looked very disturbed in it. It started off with like his parents having to go away, like, oh, you're gonna go stay with your uncle, Uncle Owen, Aunt Maru, and his parents disappear in a rush. I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't know the backstory about his parents. Why is he living with his fucking aunt and uncle? And that was kind of cryptic. It looks darker, and so I'm kind of wondering if they're trying to do a dark reboot of that. Like, will this be that kind of dark treatment to Sam Raimi's Spider-Man that Nolan's Batman was to Tim Burton?
Right.
You know, are they trying to make it a little more gritty, a little more grown up?
Sure.
And will that work with Spider-Man? You know, I can be objective about the whole goody two-shoes guy, you know, that's optimistic and stuff. But, I mean, if they're crapping on that character in his bearing that's been established in all the Spider-Man comics that I've never read.
Right.
I don't know how wise that is, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would agree with you definitely on the point that the character of Peter Parker is much more happy-go-lucky than the Bruce Wayne character.
Absolutely, yeah.
He's more, you know, Richie Rich to Scrooge McDuck. You know what I mean? Very diametrically opposed, but I think that Christopher Nolan had the right idea. Who knows what Sam Raimi ever has in his mind, but I don't know.
Did you not like the Spider-Man movies that came out?
I thought they were geared towards 8-year olds.
Wow. I really enjoyed them. Okay. I thought they were very well done. They were good superhero movies. They were solid.
Right.
You know, without, I mean, being a pile of shit.
Right.
Like the new Superman reboot that nobody can remember. Best thing about that it was had Kevin Spacey in it as Lex Luthor, and he didn't even do as good a job as Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor, you know?
Right.
What
kills me about a lot of comic book movies, and I know I'm probably going to get some slack from the proletariat for this, is that it seems like in a lot of movies, they'll cut out some of the characters from the comics to make it more narrative friendly,
right.
You know, movie friendly, which I totally get. But I think they do it on the wrong movies, you know?
Hmm.
Like, for example, The Watchmen.
Right.
Loved the shit out of that movie. Mm-hmm. But it had way too many characters. Like, you could have cut down The Watchmen, you know, you could have taken two or three of them out and eliminated, you know, 50% of the subplots and had a much more palatable film. I think a lot of the reasons why people, your mainstream folks that weren't members of the proletariat had a hard time digesting The Watchmen was that there was just so much shit going on. And unless you had some degree of background from the graphic novel...
Well, yeah. I mean, if you want fucking Jim Bob to like it, I love
Watchmen. I loved it, too.
Superb.
I loved it, too. But what I'm saying is...
Actually, I thought it was an improvement on the graphic novel. I'll even go that far.
Wow. I think that would be a large step.
It is, sir. I'm taking it. Mainly because, you know, spoiler alert...
ding, ding, ding.
The end, you know, the grand evil plot that brought everything together. In the movie, it was tied in to kind of fall back on Dr. Manhattan.
Right.
In the graphic novel, it was divorced from that. It was this separate alien attack thing that Amonakis or whatever the fuck his name is. Ozzy whatever.
Osborne.
The fucking South African faggot guy. Ozymandias, yes. He was, you know, uniting everybody under the ostensible attack from an alien force in the graphic novel. And in the movie, he used Dr. Manhattan's radiation signals to get everybody against Dr. Manhattan. And Dr. Manhattan wanted to leave Earth anyway. So I think that was a good editorial evolution on the story of Alan Moore's original novel. I did not like the adaptation of V for Vendetta, another Alan Moore epic novel series that, I mean, Natalie Portman shaved and all that stuff, and Hugo Weaving, like both those guys, did not like the script for it. Too much, we just saw The Matrix and we got to make that again in this movie. You know, that destroyed V for Vendetta for me. I got to watch it again just to remind myself what I didn't like about it. But the graphic novel series is fucking out of this world.
I love that, dude. That should be a quote somewhere on nerdaristocracy.com. I got to watch it again to remember why I fucking hated it.
You got to remind myself why you pissed me off.
It's kind of like, yeah, I think I should watch the Rednecks of Comedy.
Yeah.
Again, just to see why I fucking loathe and despise them.
Well, you just got to see if it holds up. You know, like,
it's like, yep, Larry the Cable Guy sucks as bad as I thought he did.
Yeah, still not funny.
You know?
Still that, ethically making my teeth hurt.
That Jeff Foxworthy. Still,
oh, come on, Jeff Foxworthy.
Still not comedic.
I mean, his nyuk-nyuk stuff is one thing, the pandering, but you gotta give it to him. He's a fairly creative guy. You may not like his creations, but fairly creative guy.
Hey, I will say this, as I have said throughout my career... the object of stand-up comedy is to make people laugh. They make people laugh, so I can't shit on them. And
right.
And that's one of the things. I'm putting on my old seasoned stand-up comedian hat mm-hmm. on right now. But when I do go to open mics or do a show where there's a lot of young comics performing, you know, early to mid-20s,
yeah.
and I see backstage they're always shitting on other comics.
That's just unprofessional.
Be it, yeah. right, be it some of their peers performing that night, or be it, you know, a professional comedian, your Dane Cooks, your Carrot mm-hmm. Tops, your, you know, fucking rednecks of comedy. And I always say, hey, something's working for them. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's all out of fucking jealousy and envy.
Right. The object, and that's why I've always said, I might not like what another stand-up comedian does,
mm-hmm.
but, hey, they did it. They made it happen. I know it's not their first time on stage. They fucking, you know, worked the road and got to where they are. Stand-up's not an overnight thing.
And
you know?
As you've said before, it's hard enough being torn apart from the outside for performers and entertainers to do it to themselves.
Sure.
You know?
And just like Dane Cook, people saw him as this overnight success. He had been doing it for fucking 12 years.
Yeah, you that gets I mean? Me. Like, when people break it, then people just remember from the breaking on. They don't remember putting the rungs in the ladder before sure. there, you know?
Like Daniel Tosh. I don't like him.
Mm-hmm.
Tons of people love him. Tons and tons and tons and tons of people love him. In some recent Comedy Central ratings, Tosh.0 actually beat out The Daily Show and The Colbert Report on Tuesday night.
Fucking get
That's
out.
How many dumb motherfuckers there are in this country. Sorry, proletariat, if some of you like him, I apologize. Just a difference of comedic
Well, it's still opinions. Important to be aware of where your opinions come
but
from.
But what I'm saying
as far
is...
as taste.
He doesn't look like it, mm-hmm. but... Look him up. He's almost 40 years old. I think he's like 38, 30, upper 30s.
He's got a magnificent body.
Yeah, upper 30s. So he might have just been, gotten famous in 2007 mm-hmm. or 2008, whenever the fuck it was. But he's been around. You know what
right.
I mean? He's been doing stand-up since college, and he's almost 40 years old. So he's been doing stand-up for probably 20 years, and he's been famous for the last four. So I don't like the motherfucker, or his comedic stylings, I should say,
mm-hmm.
but I respect him because he did it for 15 years before he got famous.
There you go.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
So that's been your PSA. For this episode. Sorry, I'll get down off my soapbox now.
You're tall to begin with.
That
you
is
off
true.
That thing?
I am. Yeah. I am. Tell me about... Give me some hacker news, man.
Hacker news, yeah.
I need some hacker news in my life because all there's right. been a ton of shit going down. Every day I read 15 hacker stories and can't make sense out of any of them. So
it's,
hit me.
It's popping a lot, man. And this kind of goes tail off of V for Vendetta because, you know, the anonymous... people use as one of their symbols the mask of Guy Fawkes, I think that's his name, from V for Vendetta, the character of war, you know, of the anonymous power of the individual. most recently, this kind of ties in with another story where Rupert Murdoch's organization, The Sun, had been, it's coming to light that they've been hacking into people's phones and shit like that. I mean, this is like hacking from ostensibly a legal above board corporation to get the juicy scoop on stuff, including 911 survivor families or families rather that had perished, hacking the cell phone of a girl that fucking was kidnapped and killed in Britain. That's
right.
like deplorable. And, something that I like that, I mean, I go back and forth with these fucking hackers and Lulzsec anyway, as far as like wanting to shoot them in the face slash give them a hamburger.
Right.
They defaced the website of Rupert Murdoch's The Sun, and Anonymous said that they brought down The Times and The Sunday Times, another Murdoch sites. And Lulzsec also says that it has a cache of emails from the organization that
yeah,
it is going
it
to imminently release.
Yep.
Now, I don't know how many of these are and how long it'll take to comb through it to come up with something juicy because, you know, WikiLeaks was announced and back when that was, and it took, you know, weeks for people to find nuggets in that fucking pile.
So do we understand the difference yet between Anonymous and Lulzsec? Because I read that one of the articles that I wrote was that Anonymous was to release the Sun and News of the World emails.
Okay.
But what is it one of those things where some members of Lulzsec are in Anonymous and some members of Anonymous are in Lulzsec, or is Lulzsec an offshoot of Anonymous, or...
I think it's evolving and they continue to redefine themselves as far as Lulzsec goes.
Right.
Anonymous has always been standing back a little bit more. They seem to have more social interests at heart, where Lulzsec came on the scene, they seemed like they just wanted to be the drunk kid and kick things over and make the cat scream. But it seems like since then, maybe Anonymous said, hey, Lulzsec, you people did come from us. Time to put away the childish bullshit. Yes, you can do horrible things and bring down stuff, but let's like focus a little bit. You know, sit in your chair. You know, we're going to show you how to do this.
Right.
And since then, it seems like they've had a little bit more direction in their target of stuff rather than just releasing consumers' emails, which got a lot of ire. It's like, you know, why are you releasing our emails? If you're so fucking technologically capable, why don't you make a difference with
sure.
it? You know, why are you being such a fucking punk?
Right.
Get out there and get after cocksuckers like Rupert Murdoch and other people of power that are abusing it and humble them, you know?
Right.
If you're pissed off that we're getting shit on and we're putting our faith into security systems that are compromised, we don't know any better. Educate us, you know? Why don't you pull the pants down on these people? So it seems more like they're going after that. Something interesting in the Rupert Murdoch case is Sean Hoare, H-O-A-R-E, was one of the first people, the first person to allege that the News of the World editor was encouraging phone hacking to his staff. He recently died at home, unexplained. But postmortem,
I think was found dead.
Yes.
Is a more accurate way.
What'd I say?
Died seems to elicit natural causes were
yes.
somehow at play.
Very good. He was found dead from unexplained causes, but postmortem says it was non-suspicious, which I guess. There is no poison, but I know a few iocane powder, not least among them, that are undetectable in the human system.
Right, and it's just odd to me that all of Scotland Yard is being incriminated in this.
Yeah.
And like 12 hours after they find the body, the authorities are saying, nope, it's all good. Everything's cool.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
yeah, I haven't
don't you normally wait a couple of days to make a definitive statement like that? Like, eh. It's all good.
Well, it might be one of those cop shows where they're saying, oh, it's all good. So the guilty people kind of get a little more comfortable, you know?
Right.
And then they can edge in on him, I'm hoping. But I doubt people, detectives, are as savvy as they are in dramas, you know?
Sure.
Yeah, that stuff has some reverberations in the British Parliament, even, like how close certain organizations are to them. And I'm not really up to date on all that, so I won't speak to that. But wrapping up hacker stuff... yesterday, which was the 19th, God knows when you hear this, they arrested 16 people from 10 different states, people mainly in their 20s, who were connected to the MasterCard and PayPal compromises that happened many months ago. And by many months in tech terms is like 4 or 5 months ago.
Sure.
But my heart tells me that these aren't masterminds by any means. These are people that were sloppy enough to get pegged. So we'll see how that shakes down, what they end up charging them with exactly, because all we know is that they got arrested at this point. Anonymous launched a social network. Did you hear about that?
I did not.
I'm going to call it Anonymous Plus.
Are you serious?
Yeah, to mirror Google Plus, because Anonymous was kicked off of Google Plus. They were trying to organize there. And what they wanted
seem like a very good idea to
well,
organize on Google, the most fucking
I think Google's
intrusive social or internet fucking company in the world.
Hey, you're thinking Facebook, huh?
No, I'm thinking Google.
Yeah. I don't know why they were. Maybe they just did it so they would be kicked off, so they could pull some publicity for that.
Right.
I think Lulzsec is more the media whore. They know how to get attention. and maybe they had a hand in that, and they wanted to draw attention to the Anonymous Plus social network, where they want to allow an open forum for everything, including sticking it to the man, you know. And I'm sorry, I'm out of, like, smoking weed all day and in college, so I don't think there's a big shadowy man, you know. I think everybody's the man.
Sure.
So to me, that's kind of infantile, but I want to see where it goes.
I want to meet the LulzSec, like, publicity, like their media rep.
Oh yeah, their like, PR department.
Yeah, they're like, hey, okay, Jonathan Bell from LulzSec PR. We're going. I think what we should do is we should sign up for Google and then get kicked off, and then it'll give us a nice media blitz to kind of start our social network. I think.
Let's run that by test group.
Somebody's making those decisions.
Oh yeah.
So, I want to meet the person that is like PR for LulzSec or Anonymous.
And the Anonymous Plus social network, after 2 days of it being launched, was hacked.
Nice.
And their website defaced, and people making fun of Anonymous as being morons that didn't know what they were doing.
Wow.
Because they were hacked in such a way, and then like branded with a bunch of Turkish hacker stuff. So, because supposedly a lot of hackers come out of Turkey and hack people's WordPress sites just by kind of buckshotting stuff out of a cannon and seeing what they can compromise, kind of like ours was back in the day, because I didn't have any fucking security protocol on our WordPress installation. They taught me to increase the security of that, not inviting an attack because I'm not that savvy. So that's interesting. But then there's even consideration that that defacing of the Anonymous Plus social website was done by Anonymous as a form of self-mockery.
Sure.
Or some kind of tongue-in-cheek thing. How about these kids? You don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would find it hard to believe that people that can hack the Pentagon and the CIA are going to leave their brand new baby up for raping and pillaging.
Actually, that's one of the people that was arrested recently. The guy that got the defense contractor for the Pentagon, that through a back door had some Pentagon stuff. That guy and another guy that scraped a bunch of AT&T information both left super sloppy trails of their hacking. The guy that did the AT&T stuff had worked for a company that worked for AT&T, and he had a security login to AT&T's private network, and he used that login to get all that information.
Brilliant.
Yes. The guy that got the Pentagon stuff got it and put it on a website that he was registered as being the owner of.
Good God, man.
So these guys fucking blew their fucking feet off. And why did it take so long for that to come out? I don't know. The idiocy of the criminal is, you know, historically the downfall of them.
Yeah, I found it interesting that the FBI was quick to say, hey, we arrested, you know, 12 or 16 hackers. Because my dad actually called me the other morning when he had heard about it and said, hey, you know, the bureau just got, you know, a dozen hackers in Long Island. I was like, really? So I waited for it to hit the news and it was out. And then, you know, I was thinking, wow, that's cool. That was a pretty fast response. But then, like you say, I found out that this group they arrested 2 days ago or whatever it was in New York dates back months to the PayPal, eBay fucking shit and has nothing to do with all the stuff that's been going on this week.
That's been going
but
down.
If nothing else, it should demonstrate to people that everyone is susceptible to this. So, you know, you're turning up your security in your computer, or you getting the new fucking Norton antivirus. Dude, if somebody wants your shit, they're going to take your shit if they know enough.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, they can hack CIA, FBI, Pentagon, Defense Department, Scotland Yard. I don't think fucking Norton antibug from 2002 is going to do a whole lot to defend your, you know, Dell Dimension fucking laptop from hackers, should they choose you as the lucky person to attack.
Right. Anybody skilled enough can bring down anything. As Sir Arthur Conan Doyle said through the voice of Sherlock Holmes, anything one man can create and invent, another can discover.
There you go. Yes.
So, without further ado, we're going to take a little break. Pause for the cause.
Yes, indeed.
We'll get back with part deux of this show, episode 24. And deux is French for mirth.
On the flip side...
Greetings, world. With the vanity and corruption that consumes each and every government, bank, and corporation, we see the result. It is a broken and used society that pits person against person, race against race, and religion against religion for the gains of material wealth of an elite few. Have you had your fill of cake because of the lack of bread on your tables? What you see before you is an illusion concocted by the elite to keep...
And howdy, folks. Back at you.
Back in action. So, any more hacker news, or...
You... No, man, that sews it up for now. I'm sure, I mean, this stuff seems to be dropping every couple of days now.
Right.
So, there was a link that somebody sent to us on our Facebook page. I'm sorry to the person. I don't have my notes together right now on that. But that directed me to an anonymous-produced video that outlined their multi-step plan for organizing Anonymous over the coming year. And it seems to promise great, if not vague, things. So I will post a link to that in these show notes, and everybody should check it out. It's interesting. It's very well produced. These guys are not short of creativity. But I don't know how much is just fucking smoke out of a bong and how much is, like, real stuff that is going to happen.
Right. That might have been a new listener, Megan Cromwell.
That does sound right.
I don't think she would mind me using her full name. But, yeah, she has a lot of cool posts. Members of the proletariat should...
stalk her.
Yeah, should friend her.
Yeah, and, or that.
And, no, she... I've noticed that a lot of her posts and links and stuff she puts out there are very similar to my own and the coast to coast type variety.
And, right on, Megan. Nerd up, yo.
There you go. So welcome to the proletariat. And welcome to all our new listeners and old listeners and everyone but our parents, I think, is pretty much listening at this point.
Yeah, any close blood relative.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty much the way it goes.
That's it.
I think my wife stopped listening too, so.
Good, good.
Yeah, I know. Now I can really let her.
Yeah, all right.
So about that bitch.
Right? Now when you're having problems, you can vent without retaliation. Wanted to let everybody, the proletariat, know that this coming weekend, the 29th and 30th, the aristocracy will likely be out and about in the New Orleans area,
mm-hmm.
in some form or fashion, in some group, or it could just be me. Who knows? But on Friday, the 29th of July, there is a Star Wars dance party at 1135 Decatur Street in New Orleans. We will be there. In some capacity, I'm sure. And then the following night at Tipitina's Uptown, that's Saturday the 30th, there is an alien beach party where a buddy of mine's band Clockwork Elvis will be performing. So you should check that out. Very good band, very entertaining. And who doesn't want to go to an alien beach party?
That's a great theme for a party.
Yes.
And an awesome name for a band, dude.
Yes, and I will be... what, Alien Beach Party or Clockwork Elvis?
Clockwork Elvis.
Yes. Very, very musically talented band, but also dress up like Clockwork Orange and play Elvis songs.
Naturally. What else would they do?
So it is very, very cool, and I suggest everybody go and see them perform. And what better place than at the Alien Beach Party at Tipitina's, where the nerd aristocracy will likely be in some capacity. Also wanted to toss a line out to the proletariat. We need your assistance. We need your help. It doesn't cost any money. What we need is for you to tell us what some of your favorite blogs are with regards to four specific categories. One, movies. Two, music. Three, comics. And four, video games. We need to know your favorite movie blogs. We need to know your favorite music blogs. We need to know your favorite comics blogs.
Comics.
And your favorite video game blogs. We are trying to get some stuff going with regards to guests,
networking,
correspondents, link partners, things of this nature. Mm-hmm. And we're just trying to get a better hold on the more so the blogs than the websites. Mm-hmm. I know there are a lot of websites like Blaster and stuff like that that kind of encompass all these things.
Right.
But we're mainly looking for blogs.
Independently produced.
Correct. Things that we can kind of join, have an association with, get some rapport going with. But blogs chiefly concerning movies, music, comics, or video games. So send us your suggestions. We'll try and put something up on the in the forums so you can give us direct feedback, or you can always email us or send us a Facebook message, and that would help us out considerably.
Movies, comics, video games, and
music. Yes.
Okay. Good.
So there you go. You mentioned Rupert Murdoch earlier, mm-hmm. but it's come out that the FBI is investigating him for possible. For possible federal crimes within the United States jurisdictions. So
awesome.
The FBI is on the case. So I can assure you, if he did do something wrong, he will be dealt with accordingly.
Right on. Go Spooks, man. Yes. Fucking bring down somebody.
Yes. So there you go. Hopefully I can get some insight from my contacts, my sources,
mm-hmm.
and the odds of that happening are slim and none. But I'll throw that out there anyway.
You can always throw it out.
You know, maybe it'll keep somebody listening.
I got an archaeological story.
Please,
kind of an archaeological / religious.
Is there a new Indiana Jones movie coming out?
It could be.
Okay.
It could be. Prepare for me to massacre a bunch of pronunciation here.
Sure.
Pronunciation. Yes. a temple, Padmanabhaswamy Temple.
There.
I know, right? The t-shirt's great. In India. It is a temple to Vishnu, the Hindu god. They recently unsealed several chambers in this temple that construction started in the 800s, although the remaining construction that is there today is thought to be believed to be from around the 1700s.
Right.
They have not opened the final vault of the temple because they have found so much shit so far that they're still cataloging it.
Right.
We're
talking about the Last Crusade right now, correct?
No, this would be the second one, was in India, I think. Was
Raiders?
The one with the heart out of the guy's chest.
Temple
of Doom.
Okay.
Yeah. But this is the Temple of Vishnu or Padmanabhaswamy.
Sure.
And that there's a supposed curse on the final vault. Whoever opens it will die. Okay. They found treasure in there, estimated currently, grows every day. They log something else, I guess.
Sure.
At $27 billion worth of treasure.
Yep. Last time I checked, read an article about it was at 20. So we've increased by $7 billion just since I've been following the.
I know this happened like weeks ago. It's. I want to see pictures of this stuff. I mean, like a 6-foot pure gold statue of Vishnu or something like that. I read. That sounds amazing. I want to see that stuff. The guy who was one of the chief petitioners for opening the vaults, T.P. Sundarajan, died suddenly from an unexplained illness. He was one of the people that, like, caused for them to be able to open it. He, like, was spearheading the event, died mysteriously.
Sure.
So I love the whole, like,
Egyptian lots of mysterious
tomb.
Deaths here
I
recently.
Know, right? Yes. However, from his particular brand of religion, he did not go to seek medical help once he fell ill and developed a fever. Instead, just stayed in his home, and I'm sure it didn't get any better, and died. And then there's a bunch of like devout Hindi faithfuls that think these tombs should not be disturbed. You know, it's in a temple. It's holy. It's part of the heritage and the whole religion. So you shouldn't go in there. Which brought me to the point of I see where they're coming from. You know, it's a landmark for their spirituality. And what gives anybody the right to crack it open and go in there? But then I also see it on the other hand, for the interest of archaeology and human history, not so much the worth of the stuff, because it's not like somebody's going to bring it down to a pawn shop unless they don't have the security tight enough on it. But should it be left undisturbed because so many people know that it's there, even though they don't know what it is, just through the mythos that's built up by it and thus bolsters their spirituality, thus sanctifying it and justifying it to remain hidden? Or is it more beneficial to open it up, catalog things, put it in a museum, maybe near the site, dedicated to it? Is that more enriching for the spirituality of the region?
You know, I've been reading books on archaeology my entire life.
This belongs in a museum.
Exactly. From the first time I saw Indiana Jones when I was 4 years old, mm-hmm. started reading a lot of books about archaeology and paleontology and all that good stuff. One of the questions that I have always had through my reading and researching and educating myself on this crap is, at what point does an artifact become an artifact? Like, specifically with regards to tombs, mm-hmm. temples, those, you know, things of a religious variety, mm-hmm. or of a burial variety. At what point does a cemetery become an archaeological site? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, yeah. If you and I go down the street and go to the fucking cemetery and dig up a guy that's 150 years old and steal his, you know, saber that he was buried with... Mm-hmm. You and I go to prison for a long period of time.
Right.
That's 150 years. Mm-hmm. Is it 500 years? Is it 1,000 years? Like, at what point does
Yeah, what's the statute of limitations where grave sure. robbing becomes archaeological dig?
Right. I mean, just because you have doctor in front of your name, you know, director of archaeology at Syracuse University, mm-hmm. or, you know, BYU or wherever the fuck, does that give you carte blanche to go around fucking traipsing around ancient temples and disturbing, you know, burial tombs that are fucking 5,000 years old?
Well, I think it hinges on whatever the custodians say that are legal custodians of that property that you put your spade into. However, the legal custodians may say, sure, Dr. XYZ, go ahead. But you may have a sect of followers of that religion or that race or that culture that finds that extremely offensive. Like, hey, we're going to go bury up this Native American ground and, you know, sure. pull some people out of the dirt because it's part of American history.
Yeah, because, I mean...
Cherokees might not be so happy about that.
Is it Hobbs Cemetery in New Orleans, close to City Park? It's just to the west of Delgado, behind. Oh, right. Mm-hmm. It's really sad because it's where the, I don't know the correct term, really poor people that die in New Orleans, be they homeless or can't afford a burial, it's where the city inters them.
Yeah, Potter's Field kind of thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And after Katrina, it literally sat destroyed for like 3 years because I guess the custodian or whoever was in charge of it fucking bailed, and then the city said, well, we got other shit to worry about.
Right.
So, I mean, literally, Ryan, like 2.5 years after Katrina, I was still taking people to this cemetery, walking them around and being like, how fucked up is this? Because the graves are overgrown, markers are down, literally coffins coming up out of the ground and out of the mausoleums.
Yeah, I saw, like, something like that. I don't know if it's the same one, but it was on Canal, actually, down by that, along the trolley line, where there's like a little Alterno hippie coffee shop next door.
The Jewish cemetery?
Maybe it is that.
Jewish cemetery is just north of the head shop. Right there by the beach.
I think that's it. There were crypts where the roofs of them were caved in, and you could look in and like see, you know, disintegrated bone remnants.
Yeah.
I was out there with my wife and my kid, and my wife found a fucking jawbone.
Really?
A piece of a human jawbone.
No shit.
And the little ghoul took it with her back to our home.
Wow.
And I was like, honey, what's up? I know you're like, you know, Tim Burton and creepy stuff, but what's going on? And she returned it to the offices of the cemetery when the hours were open, because we were there at like 6 or something like that.
Right.
And she brought it wrapped up in a bandana or something, and they kind of looked at her like the creepy ghoul she is. Of, sure. Like,
I'm very glad that story ended that way, because I would be kind of pissed if it was sitting on your mantle
decoration. No, we took our shavings of it that we need for our rituals, but we should return the rest of it.
Right.
Who's going to miss it?
Yeah, but I guess maybe I'll send an email to I'll get on...
Indiana Jones?
No, I'll just get on a respected university's archaeology department site. I'm sure they have a link to one of the professors. And I'll write him and let the proletariat know, because I do that kind of stupid, nerdy thing.
Well, that's a good
debate. If I have a question about something, I'll look up a professor and ask him.
You mean you try to have it answered?
I do, believe it or not. It's ludicrous.
You got that hair up your ass, boy. No, that's a good question for everybody in the proletariat. You know, like, when does it stop being an artifact, and when does it stop being a relic and become an artifact? When is it okay? And should it be okay to rip it out of the ground / temple / pyramid and put it on display? Because I can go either way. You know, I can respect the religion and stuff, but there's part of my greater intellect that wants that piece of craftsmanship and that history to be examined and known. But I don't want to, in that, strip away the sanctity that a people have for something, because that's tantamount to rape.
Sure, right? Absolutely. Yeah, I don't want some asshole digging me up in a couple of hundred years just to, you know...
piss on you?
Right.
Right.
See what a Prince Edward looks like, or Albert, or... I don't know.
You got both of them, huh?
Yeah. Oh, man. That's good stuff.
Yeah, that's interesting. Like that. Like that question that it makes me think about.
In other New Orleans news, famed New Orleans Saints running back, all-time rushing leader Deuce McAllister.
Deuce!
Had his home in Luling foreclosed on. It is now up for auction. So if any of the proletariat would enjoy living in the house that was once Deuce McAllister's, it is my understanding that it has a fleur-de-lis-shaped pool.
No way.
In the background.
Yes, sweet.
It has the Saints logo-shaped pool. In the backyard, so you can, if you've got a few million that you're not doing anything with at the moment,
Bala.
Buy the Casa de Deuce.
So how did it get repossessed? I mean, certainly he's got enough money to make fucking payments on it.
I don't know. My guess would be the same thing as a real estate professional.
Mm-hmm.
My educated professional opinion or guesstimate would be that he's in the same situation that a lot of people are in, and that he probably bought that house or had it built at the height of the boom, probably spent God knows how much, you know, for sake of the example, let's say $5 million mm-hmm. on the house, and maybe he wants to move back home to Mississippi, the Jackson area where his car dealership is, which... by the way, I understand is filed for bankruptcy. But maybe he wants to move, looked into selling the house, and now a real estate agent is saying, well, we can put it on the market at $2 million, but prepare to take less. And he says, like a lot of people say, well, I'm not taking a $4 million loss, so just have them foreclose on it.
Wow. That's actually financially preferable to...
Absolutely.
Really?
Absolutely. Happening all over the country.
I never considered that being a strategic thing to do.
They guesstimate that, I think the last figures I saw was between 25 and 40% of foreclosures happening now are... the consumers, I'm trying to remember the exact professional
willfully
term,
defaulting.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
They estimate that 25 to 40% of those are just the consumers are just walking away from them. Whereas it's not the bank saying, hey, get the fuck out. It's the, you know, the savvy businessmen and the lawyers and those kind of assholes mm-hmm. that are like, well, you know, I did agree to pay you this for this set amount of time, but you know what? You can come after me, but I've got, you can ruin my credit for 5 years, but, you know, I've got $15 million in the bank or, you know, $800,000 in the bank. I can buy a little house, pay cash for it, and tell you to fuck off.
Wow.
And that's what they do.
Damn, dude.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
Yep. So there's that. And last bit of nerd news, Deluxe and Technicolor, two big names in the film industry, both responsible for a lot of post-production aspects of filmmaking, processing the 35mm film that a lot of the studios shoot these big-budget movies on.
Now, for those of you that don't know, 35mm is a type of celluloid that's derived from plants, if I'm not mistaken, that images are captured upon through a camera.
Yes.
Not a digital camera that you might be familiar with, little boys and girls, but actual analog film.
Yes.
Please continue.
Yes, the proletariat. I'm sure a couple of people needed that.
Mm-hmm.
But we have full faith in our listeners. Ryan was just clarifying for those of you that are young and of the all digital world and
right.
not of the analog true film 35mm.
Well, that's why this is happening, because we're on that cusp.
Absolutely. Many people nowadays don't remember when you used to have to take your film to the Walgreens or to... even pre every pharmacy having a photo lab, it was you had to go to the camera shop and wait a week and a half to get your pictures back. That's how it fucking worked. And, you know, a lot of people can't remember that, just like a lot of people, a lot of young people now can't remember pre-internet because they never went to school without the internet or, you know,
rotary phones,
made friends without the internet. But anyway... Deluxe and Technicolor, two big names in the processing, post-production realm of filmmaking are consolidating, and they're remaining two independent companies, as I understand it, but they're scaling back greatly their actual, like you said, celluloid film departments and concentrating more and putting money into and R&D into... all digital stuff. So they are, it is essentially signifying the beginning of the end.
Yeah, absolutely.
For actual shot on film movies, which is kind of sad. I mean, I know there are a lot of big name directors that are going to stick to their guns, but once this generation, you know, of Coppolas and Spielbergs and, you know, those kind of guys, once they die off or stop making movies, then the Soderberghs and the Lynches and the guys that have kind of embraced the digital realm, that next generation of filmmakers, it's probably going to be the end of the end.
Yeah, an actual
filmmaking.
Actual film will become something that is quaint and anecdotal.
Sure.
And a Oliver, the next generation's Oliver Stone, might do it as kind of like a throwback. Like, oh, remember right. when this was a thing?
We're going to shoot this on real film.
Yeah, what a you know game changer I am.
Yeah, it's going to be like vinyl is now to right. the music industry.
See, I remember making that argument when I was in school many moons ago when digital was kind of the baby and on the scene.
Sure.
I remember talking to some senior classmen that were like in graduate films classes, and I were like, so what's up? I mean, the future, it's going to be digital, right? And they're like, no, it's never going to look as good as film. I was like, do you not know technology? Do you not know computers and filters and that anything you can achieve with celluloid, you can emulate with a computer?
Yes.
And they didn't, I guess, have that foresight. And I didn't really argue the point because I was like, well, they're graduate students. Certainly they know more than I do.
Right.
And now it's just so much more cost effective, especially if you're doing an independent production. Like, I mean, that thing that we filmed, the Harry Potter thing, if we were doing that with, you know, even 16 millimeter film would have cost sure. us probably $100 at least to do.
Oh, at least.
All it cost yeah. us was the cost of whatever Whataburger I got on the way back.
Right.
You know? So, I mean, that's the way it's going. Digital, like it or not, it's here to stay and it's going to take over. And, it is sad, I guess, to the enthusiasts, but, I mean, if you – I want to see an argument made that here is something that digital film production cannot achieve, that only analog film production can.
Right.
I have yet to see that argument, you know, clearly stated.
Sure. Well, what are you nerding on this week?
I've nerded on the resumption. Is that a word? Resumption?
I don't know.
Resuming? The
apparently you haven't been nerding on it too hard.
I haven't been nerding on the dictionary, that's for damn sure. The resumption of one of my favorite, hands down, television show for the past decade.
Okay.
Breaking Bad.
All right.
On AMC.
Right.
Starring Bryan Cranston.
Yes.
Awesome show. Came their fourth season this past Sunday. Sundays, evenings on AMC. Check it out. Actually, you need to get in at the ground floor at the beginning, see season one. Any way you can. It's remarkable. They're getting back into it. The first episode was kind of tying up some loose end cliffhanger stuff that was from, you know, the season finale before. And they actually took off an entire season, so I've been like jonesing for this shit.
Right.
Bryan Cranston is amazing. I mean, I'm just
yeah.
just like so much empathy and emotion and subtext that motherfucker can do. He's like a goddamn ninja of acting.
Sure. Yeah, I have been recalling a favorite TV show of mine as well. Mm-hmm. This week rewatching the Weeds series.
Yeah.
And really enjoyed that. It was kind of one of those things where a girl I was dating got me involved in it.
Right.
And I watched the entire series with her.
Aw.
So yeah. I kind of had that mental hang up where for the past couple of years where it's like, okay, yeah. I'm going to stay away from the show for a while because
your hand goes for her on the couch. And
yeah,
she's not there.
Exactly.
Just cry.
So, I've been abstaining from it, mm-hmm. but, now since I've had a more recent heartbreak, I can revisit
right,
the previous one.
That cut is somewhere else on your brain.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. I've been rewatching the Weeds series.
And are you objectively enjoying it now? Sans that?
I am. I mean, there is that degree of, oh, yeah, I remember that. So it's not like a shock. Mm-hmm. It's more of a, oh, okay, I remember when this happened.
See, I started watching that on Netflix, too, because I was like, oh, it's on Netflix. I'll give it a chance now.
Sure.
And really, really enjoyed it. And mm-hmm. I kind of fell off of watching it. I think I got somewhere in season two and just kind of tapered off.
Right.
You know? I don't know if you've experienced that. I forget what I got onto. I don't think the show lost me any particular way.
Right. Yeah. So I'll be juggling Weeds and the new Game of Thrones that you have blessed me with. Mm-hmm. So I'll be juggling those two in amongst working on Nerd Aristocracy with the guests and the correspondents and things of this nature.
Sweet. All right, Proletariat, tell us what you're nerding up on at the forums at nerdaristocracy.com. And Jeepers Creepers, I ain't got much more to describe.
That's it. Have a good one, folks. Enjoy it. Hope to see you out there.
All right, kids. Till later.
If adventure has a name, it must be Indiana Jones. From Steven Spielberg and George Lucas. Indiana Jones. And the Temple of Doom.
You don't believe me. You will, Dr. Jones.